Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
What's so great about Great Britain?
Why are the Americas named after Amerigo Vespucci?
And why do the Germans call themselves Dutch?
Join us as we look down the rabbit hole of Spain, find out why Venezuela is a bit Venetian, and learn how the shapes of the land shape the names of the land in this worldly wise episode of Words Unraveled.
Welcome to another Words Unraveled. I'm Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words.
And I'm Jess DeFerris, author of the etymology book Useless Etymology. And today we are taking a globe-trotting etymological journey around the world with country names.
Yeah, it's a whole world of words. We're going to go step by step around this planet of ours and just pick out a few country names, explain where they came from.
We probably can't get to all of them, but we'll get to the ones we can today.
Yeah, we'll do a few and then we'll come back and do another episode.
We will go where our wanderlust takes us.
Yeah, but we should start, like any good journey, at home, I think, and explain our respective home nations. Because I'm actually in Germany, anyone who doesn't know, but I am British.
No.
And Jess is in the United States.
Sure am.
I know the sort of vague idea that America is named after Amerigo Vespucci, but then again, I've heard that maybe that isn't true. Can you settle this thing for me?
It's a convoluted story, and it has to do with excited cartographers.
Oh, goody.
I mean, imagine you are in Europe at the time when the quote-unquote new world is being quote-unquote discovered. That's a whole can of worms, but imagine you're a European at this time, you're a thinker, you probably are pretty excited about news coming from that region by explorers, conquistadors. The name America was first published in 1507 as part of this joint project by German cartographer, and you're probably going to have to help me with this one because it's a German name, Martin Waldseemüller.
Waldseemüller. I think it's like Forest Lake Miller.
Excellent. And his buddy, the Alsatian humanist, Matthias Ringmann. They had this circle of humanist scholars called the Gymnasium Vosgiens, which was based in Saint-Dié in France and founded around 1500 under the patronage of the Duke of Lorraine, with the goal of publishing a new edition of Ptolemy's Geography. And they recruited these two guys for their cartographic skills and their classical language expertise. This all started because there was a French translation of the Sonderini letter, this 1506 letter, which credited Amerigo Vespucci with the discovery of a new continent. And when they found this, they kind of shifted focus. So instead of Ptolemy's Geography, they went to produce a book called the Cosmographia Introductio, or the Introduction to Cosmography, which contained Waldseemüller's wall map and globe, explicitly naming the new continent America. And the book accompanied this companion text with this gigantic map called the Universalis Cosmographia, which also described the continent as America. So it's all from this one letter. And the Sandorini letter is a whole other thing, because the record of his Amerigo Vespucci's explorations is based mainly on a few letters that are kind of disputed. So historians are a little divided about how many voyages he actually undertook, to the degree to which he played a role in them. And some of them are totally accepted, and then two others are a little bit doubtful.
Okay, so he maybe didn't do enough to have a whole, I would say continent, but really we think of it as three continents
right
now, named after him.
Right. Columbus reached the Caribbean in 1492. Vespucci's well-documented voyages were slightly later, and they helped to more widely establish that the lands across the Atlantic were not, in fact, Asia, but were entirely a separate continent, which was well-known and accepted to many people, but then also not to other people.
Right.
And the other thing is, it's feminized, which this raises the question, like, why are countries often feminine in English, right? And one theory is because in many languages, including Latin, words like terra are feminine, or more generally, because the earth is bountiful and nurturing and life emerges from it, so we name it after ladies.
Right. So that's why we have a lot of Latinate names for countries that end with ia rather than a masculine ending.
And South America was the first America. The first thing that appeared on the map was designating South America as America.
There we go. Settled. So they were there first.
Right.
Controversial.
So what about your side of the pond?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, where do we start? With Britain, or do we start with the United Kingdom? Indeed. Do I start with England? Do I start with what? There is a lot to explain here. So I'll start with England, land of the Angles. And I'll try and keep all of these quite swift, because there's a lot to talk about. So you've got the Angles, the Saxons, and the Jutes. This is the sort of the story that is, I would say, generally accepted. It's not really accepted by historians, but it's the best story we've got. The Angles, the Saxons, and Jutes are these Germanic tribes that come over to Britain, so that big island off the coast of continental Europe, after the Romans have left, and it's just the Celtic Britons that appear to be living there. Well, I guess there are some Roman stragglers as well. These Anglo-Saxons and Jutes, they take control of various bits of England, pushing out the Celts to the extremes, areas that become Cornwall, Wales, and somewhere called Strathclyde that we don't talk about very much anymore. Anyway, why is England named after the Angles then, if we had these three tribes come over? Interesting question, Rob. Thank you very much. I'll answer it. It's because so the Saxons, so there is a Saxony, right? It's in Germany. It's not far from where I'm sitting right now. Whereas the Angles, they just commit a little bit more to their new lands. They bring their
branding.
Yeah, exactly. They bring their royals over. They also have some of the more powerful kingdoms as well. They've got Northumbria, they've got Mercia. These are the really sort of powerful new kingdoms in England. And so it becomes known as Anglerland, the land of the Angles, and that sort of slowly over time becomes England. Nice and simple. And basically everywhere in the world, every language in the world refers to England in relation to the Angles, the name that they use. That is, except for England's closest neighbours. In Irish, it's known as Sassana, which means land of the Saxons.
Ah, excellent. It is a function of branding in many of these cases, right? Because that's why the United States of America is shorthand America. It's because the founding fathers really committed to that term.
Yeah, we haven't actually even spoken about the fact that the states of the United States are not states.
Right.
They're provinces. Why are they called states? Well, that is now what a state is, but you know, it doesn't meet any of the earlier definitions.
Not nation states by any means.
I should mention Wales, because there's a very common etymology that's given of Wales, or at least of Welsh, that the word is an Old English word meaning a slave or a foreigner, right? Welsh, which actually has some truth to it. So there is a word in the Germanic languages before England even comes into existence that is Weal, right? And it's a word that is used by the Germanic tribes on continental Europe to describe the Romance-speaking peoples that come to their area. For example, the word walnut means nut of the Romance-speaking people. When we talk of Romance people, we're talking about Latin languages, the Romans, basically. And the people who speak French in Belgium to this day are known as the Walloons, which also comes from this Wael word. So when the Angles, Saxons, and Jutes end up in England, they encounter these people speaking Celtic languages, and they don't have a word for them. So they use the word that they were using back over on continental Europe to describe the other people whose language they really didn't understand, which is Wael. And so the people speaking this language are Waelish, Welsh. Voila. And that's excellent. Where Welsh comes from. Does it mean foreigner? Well, it means person who speaks a foreign tongue, so sort of. Does it mean slave? No, not at the point that we start calling Wales, Wales, and the people Welsh. But later on, it does take on that meaning in the English language. It's true. But it's not right to say that the Welsh were called slaves. It's just that that word, because the Celts were commonly enslaved, did come to mean a slave.
That's like the word slave itself, which is from the word Slav for the same reason.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? And then I should mention Scotland. The original Scotland was actually in Ireland. The Scots were the Scotus, were a tribe of the northern part of Ireland, and they traveled across to the Western Isles of Scotland. And in fact, the earliest citations of the word Scotland do refer to part of Ireland, which is kind of amazing. And then just lastly, Cornwall. So I know Cornwall is part of England now, but it's worth a mention that this was a Celtic nation, Cornwall, and the wall at the end of there is exactly the same sound as at the start of Wales.
Excellent. Not corn at the wall.
No, there's no corn involved. They were the Corn Wearlass, which were the Welsh from that part of England. But do I need to go into, I think I maybe do, briefly, and then we will move on. I'm sorry, I realize I'm on a bit of a rant here.
No, I'm here for it.
Great Britain. Do you know why it's called Great Britain?
It sure is great. No, I don't think
that is. Yeah, I mean, we like to think so, but it's not great in any sort of flattering sense, other than that it means it's big, because just across the water, we have another Celtic nation called Brittany.
Little Britain.
And Great Britain, exactly. Great Britain is the big Brittany, because it's where the Celts were, because Britannia is the Roman name for Britain. It probably comes from the Greek name for Britain, which was Britannica, which in turn probably comes from what the Celts were calling themselves, the painted people, the Britanni. But there is a really good story in Geoffrey of Monmouth, who we don't believe, because he gives us things like the myth of King Arthur. But he claims that that Britain gets its name from Brutus, the Trojan.
Yeah, that seems like a stretch.
Yeah, it does. So the story goes that Brutus somehow finds himself in London to establish New Troy, and Britain gets named after him.
Looking for different rulers to stab.
But that's not true.
Oh, that's funny.
So there you go. It's much more likely that the Brits ultimately named themselves. And then also we actually have the official name of our country, which is the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. So when we say the UK, we're abbreviating it. It's the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
Is a mouthful.
I mean, it's too much. It's on my passport. It's too long. It was the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland, but then Ireland obviously seceded from that.
I don't know how official it is, but it reminds me of United States and major outlying territories, which is, you sometimes see.
Is that the full name?
I don't think it's the official name, but often when you see the collective of the United States described in one place, it's United States and major outlying territories.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
So we've started to uncover trends in country naming here. We've got ones named after explorers. We've got ones named after tribes and people. What else do we have? How else do we name things?
Yeah, that's interesting. So I was reading an article while I was researching this that claimed, well, so some places this claim is put as all the countries of the world are named after four things. Although elsewhere it is almost all of the countries of the world are named after four things. And I think that is probably true. And these four things are either a tribe, so yeah, we've already been there, a feature of the land, which we haven't talked about, topography, a directional description, yeah, so whereabouts it is in relation to another country, perhaps, or an important person. There's our Amerigo Vespucci, although maybe he's not important enough, I would say.
There's a witty judgment in that there.
Has anyone's place in geography and history ever been less deserved? Who knows? Big statement. So let's work our way through those four, and then let's see if we can find some that don't fit those four, perhaps.
One that comes to mind with a topographic name would be the country name Honduras. It is the Spanish word for depths. Basically, the earliest known use of this term dates back to the first voyage of Christopher Columbus along the Central American coast in 1502. And it might just be because the coastal waters there are deep, but there is a little story behind it. According to chroniclers such as Bartolome de las Casas, Columbus encountered rough seas and deep coastal waters near present-day Trujillo and is said to have remarked upon escaping them, "Thanks to God, we have escaped these depths." By the way, De La Casas was one of the cooler Spaniards to be involved in conquistadoring, you might say. He was originally complicit with this, but then later in the 16th century, he became a monk and he realized that the encomienda, the Spanish labor system in which colonists were given grants conferring the right to demand tribute and forced labor from native inhabitants of an area, he decided that was really wrong, and he spent 50 years fighting back against the mistreatment of local peoples and slavery.
Right.
Cooler dude than the other dudes.
We like him. Yeah. Another one that's about sort of geographical features, it seems obvious, and is obvious, I suppose, is Iceland, named by Loki Vilgerðarson, his name was, a guy who tried to settle there, ultimately unsuccessfully, I think, as many Vikings did. Before he got there, they were calling it Snowland, but he decided to call it Iceland. One day he's out on a hike and he sees a load of
ice.
A load of ice, because it's got these massive glaciers there. But there is a theory that he called it Iceland to try and deter people from coming over, right? He either wanted it for himself or he appreciated that the place is... I mean, if you've been to Iceland...
Volcanoes are what you see.
It doesn't want you to be there. It is not an island that wants humans there. Yeah, it's volcanoes, it's ice, it's all manner. It's on fire all of the time. It doesn't want people there. But the reason I mentioned this idea that he was trying to deter people with the name of the country is that it is juxtaposed perfectly with Greenland, which is named by someone who's actually... exiled from Iceland for murder, Eric the Red.
The saga of Eric the Red states, "In the summer, Eric left to settle in the country he had found, which he called Greenland. As he said, people would be attracted there if it had a favorable name." And the saga is a 13th century Icelandic work about the Norse exploration of North America. And this passage focuses on Eric the Red's exploration during the 10th century.
Yeah.
So, but the same account is found in a 12th century work known as the Book of Icelanders as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So all of the sagas are written a long time after the stories that they tell generally. But I'm glad that that particular saga does back up what I was about to say, which is where Iceland was named to deter people, Greenland was named to attract people, despite the fact that Greenland is even less habitable than Iceland.
It's icier. in the modern era, Kalaallit Nunaat is the land of the Kalaallit, the major Greenlandic Inuit group who lives there, is the official name in Greenlandic. So that's kind of a cool one.
Also, there's this theory about Iceland being the origin of our word island, because in Old English, Iceland is spelled I-S-L-A-N-D. It's not true. We should point that out. We're referring to little bits of land surrounded by water as islands, without the S, I should point out, before Iceland is being called Iceland. So every island is not named after Iceland.
That also kind of floats the notion that Isle and island are technically not related, but influenced each other.
Yeah, that's mad, isn't it? The uh-huh. S in island is there because there's an S in isle. Yeah, and the S is only in isle because we put it back in, these Renaissance scholars, these cheeky, cheeky folk, to make it seem more like insula, which is the Latin for island.
Fun folk etymology entanglements.
So you have countries that are named after their topography, you know, features, as we've just discussed. But you also have countries that are named by, you know, where they are or where they are in relation to other countries. I mean, Austria, so in German, Austria is Österreich, which means Eastern Empire, because it was on the eastern frontier of the German-speaking lands. And obviously you've got Norway, which is the North Way, because it's up north, and you would follow it to go north. You would follow the coast of Norway. I mean, these are just European examples. You've got even more obvious ones, like Ecuador, which is just the Spanish for equator. In fact, you know, I found out today that the French for Ecuador, the country, is Équateur. So they just call it
equator.
Equator.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting.
What we're pointing out here, too, is sometimes we reveal power dynamics of the past in how we name things. So, like, from whose perspective is this area called the border, you know?
Very good point. And these are exonyms, of course, a lot of the time, right? So when we talk about an exonym is a name that's used outside of a country to refer to it. And an endonym is a word that's used inside of a country to refer to itself. There's a lot of really interesting ones of those, actually.
Sometimes exonyms become endonyms because they're misapplied, or they're one of these like micro features that gets kind of blown up to the larger area. And the biggest one is probably Canada, right? Because it's from a St. Lawrence Iroquoian word, Kanata, meaning village, which was recorded in Jacques Cartier's accounts from his 1535 to 1536 voyage. And he wrote that two local men were talking about their home village. There are some people who say that he misinterpreted what they were saying and applied it to the whole country. But apparently in his writings, it does say, like, he's like, no, they were talking about their village, but it got blown up over time to refer to the larger area.
There isn't a country that is named after an era, though. Do you know about the story of Madagascar?
Madagascar. No, tell me. I have read this, but I would love to know.
So Madagascar is named accidentally after Mogadishu. The story goes that
that's right.
Marco Polo was struggling to read an Arabic text that was talking about Mogadishu and thought it was referring to the massive island off the coast. And so the massive island got called Madagascar and is now called Madagascar by the people that lived there.
Interesting.
Because the people that lived there, the tribes that lived there, had never had a name for the entire island, right? So the one that they are now using is this mistaken name coined by Marco Polo, which is kind of extraordinary, isn't it? Absolutely extraordinary. Some other good endonyms, by the way, that might surprise you. So Albania isn't called Albania in Albanian. It's called Shqipëria. Armenia is called Hayastan. In Armenian, Hungary is called Magyarország, which the Magyars is a term that you'll have heard as, you know, a people. China is Donghua. Actually, China is a really good one to talk about. It means Middle Kingdom. And they have a little template they use for naming other countries. I don't know if you've come across this. Do you know what the Mandarin for America is, for example?
What is it?
It's Meigua, which literally means something really flattering. It means beautiful land.
Oh, right? Very nice.
But it's been chosen because the May sounds a bit like America.
Huh.
England is called Yingguo, which means brave land, for example.
But it also sounds a little bit like it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Fargo is France. So they take sort of phonetic sounds that are similar and that they can easily handle, stick this guo at the end of it, which means kingdom or empire or whatever. And voila, you've got a Mandarin name for your country.
All things told, I don't think that's a terrible system.
I mean, it's fine. And they end up giving all these really lovely names to all these different countries.
Your story about Madagascar reminds me of Venezuela. Do you know what Venezuela is named after?
No, I have no idea.
Venice.
Really?
Yeah. So the expedition commanded by Spanish navigator Alonso de Ojeda, with Italian cartographer and explorer Amerigo Vespucci aboard, encountered these indigenous stilt house settlements along the shore of Lake, I'm going to say this wrong, Maracaibo maybe. And apparently these dwellings built on wooden piles over the water reminded Vespucci of Venice. So it became Venezuela and Venezuela and Little Venice.
A more recent interesting fact about Venezuela is that Simon Bolivar was Venezuelan, but Bolivia is named after him.
Right. Republica Bolivariana, I believe, de Venezuela.
Very nice.
In 1999.
While we're in the region, can you tell us about some more of the South American names?
Guyana, Suriname, and French Guiana, which the reason I am grouping these together is because they are often grouped together. They get their name from a local word, and it probably refers to, it's land of many waters, which refers to this dense network of rivers and streams and wetlands. And we see water features featuring heavily throughout Spanish and Portuguese named regions in this area. Going a bit north, the Bahamas are also named for shallow waters, in contradiction to Honduras, which is named after deeper waters.
I tell you the one that I know, Argentina, named after silver.
Yes, indeed.
There we go.
That's a fun one.
What's quite interesting is that it's not the Spanish word for silver.
It means...
which is plata.
It's the Latin word for silver, argentum, or argentum. It also gives us the word argent.
Yeah, it does.
The reason it is named after silver is not because of silver, but because of Rio de la Plata, the River of Silver, which is a mistranslation of indigenous reports that... Well, okay, so it is named after silver, but it's named after the river. Indigenous reports that upriver peoples had silver stuff. So it is the River of Silver, perhaps a silvery-looking river, but also because apparently upriver there were people with silver.
I want to know about Colombia. I've got it in my head that it's named after Christopher Columbus, but I'm not actually certain of that.
It is. It is. By the way, Columbus's last name means dove. Columba means dove. But the name was first proposed in the late 18th century by Venezuelan revolutionary Francisco de Miranda as part of his vision for a unified, independent Pan-American state that encompassed several other Spanish colonies, and therefore was named after the guy who at the time was the most famous for having discovered, again, lots of air quotes around that word. This region. Are you also familiar with the notion of the United States as being called Colombia with a U instead of an O in the middle?
Is this the same Colombia that appears in the full name of Washington, D.C.?
Exactly. So in the late 18th century, Colombia became a poetic and political alternative to America, also from Columbus's name. This is like late 18th century, including a reference in the Gentleman's Magazine in 1738.
Making another appearance.
Columbia became a woman, a popular personification of the United States, and you still see this female figure called Columbia often.
You talked about countries being feminine, right? And you've got Britannia, who is a woman. You've got Columbia, who is a woman. You've got Marianne, the representation of Frenchness as well.
There were songs about this, like Hail Columbia was a patriotic song and an unofficial national anthem before the Star Spangled Banner. Columbia was sort of the pre-19th century, you might even say like the pre-19th century Uncle Sam.
Right. Auntie Sam.
Mm-hmm. Right. But of course, Uncle Sam was the like war figure, the whole like meat packer worker doing our part for the war effort kind of figure.
I've got one more America's question for you. I once heard it said that the Brazil nut is not named after Brazil, but Brazil is named after the nut. Can you tell me whether that's nonsense or not?
Sort of. Huh? The modern country named Brazil is from the Portuguese word for that. It was a word for Brazil wood, which so not necessarily the nut.
The tree,
which is native to the Atlantic coastal forests, where this like red tinted heartwood was highly valued. So more the wood than the nut, but the nut also.
You know, we discussed endonyms and exonyms and countries having different names, you know, internally to externally. And I didn't mention the country in which I am sitting right now, Germany, which is an amazing example of it, really. Germany means the land of the Germanic peoples.
Not right? The land of the germs.
Not the land of the germs, no. Obviously, in Germany, Germany isn't called Germany. It's called Deutschland, mm-hmm. Right? Which is exactly the same word as the word we apply to the people of the Netherlands, the Dutch. And you actually have, this comes together in America, right? When you talk about Pennsylvania Dutch, which is actually a version of German, right? So how does this happen? Well, Dutch, Deutsch, all these words, they mean Germanic speaking people, right? So actually everyone that speaks a Germanic language is to some extent Dutch. I think that makes us a bit Dutch, Jess. But we've given that name to the people of, you know, the Low Countries, whereas the Germans have taken that name on for themselves when they brought together this confederation of all of these Germanic speaking, or specifically German speaking states, so that they speak a variety of them. But the interesting thing about Germany as well is that it's got so many different names from its neighboring countries. You have like Niemtsi, which, you know, basically means silent people or people we don't understand. And then you've got the Alemannia, which is the French name for Germany, which is from the Latin name for the region as well. And we get the word Germany from the Romans as well, because they wrote Germania, written by Tacitus, the historian, to describe the regions that they hadn't conquered yet, the barbarian regions, which were called Germania. And we took that word and turned it into Germany eventually.
This is how France works too, right? Land of the Franks.
Interesting, right? Because the Franks are a Germanic tribe, but the French are romantic for sure.
The word is, it's Latinized Germanic, right? The word Frank, the meaning of it is debated. Sometimes it's like free person, and sometimes it's fierceness, and sometimes it's javelin.
Yeah, very interesting, right? Because yeah, they think it might come from the name of a weapon, perhaps something like a javelin. And France originally only referred to what, you know, as far as modern day France is concerned, the north of that. In the south, they spoke a different language. You know, they still do to an extent. Occitan, which is the language of southern France. That area was not called France, but it is now.
Would that be related to the word Occident?
Ah, no, it's not. So this is a really interesting linguistic thing. I hope people will come with me on this. It's a little bit nerdy, but
why do you think
Dante
people are here?
Alighieri. a fair point. Dante, as in Dante's Inferno, right? Coined all these various terms. He was he was really into his linguistics. And he described the language that was being spoken in France, as in the northern part of France, as the langue d'huile, right? Which means the language of yes, huile being an old French way of saying oui.
No kidding.
The language that was being spoken in the south, Occitan or Provençal, their word for yes was oc. So those languages were called the langue d'oc. And that's a term we still use. You'll see it on wine bottles sometimes. And then you also had the long C, of which Italian is one, which is languages where the word C is used.
So the land of yes.
They're all called the land of yes. Isn't that amazing?
That's
so
very
Occitan
cool.
Means, or Occitania, Occitani, they mean place of the yes pronounced like that.
So what about other countries in this region? Let's go to Spain. I've heard it's a bit of a rabbit hole.
Uh-huh. I see what you did there. I see. Uh-huh. I think people will be very surprised if they don't already know to know that Spain comes from a word that originally meant land of the rabbits. It's kind of incredible. So yeah, Hispania is the Latin name. So Spain comes from that, Hispania. They all come from, you know, Hispania. And that supposedly the Romans took from the Carthaginians, and the Carthaginian word for land of the rabbits. I think technically it doesn't mean rabbits, it means the land hyrax, which is a slightly different animal, a bit rabbity. But yes, Spain, land of the rabbits.
They look a little bit like vampire rabbits without long ears.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Hyrax does sound kind of creepy. And they are kind of like, I don't know, creepy rabbits. We could talk about Italy, but no one knows where Italy came from.
Oh, no.
Yeah, really. It's like a mystery where Italy came from. It was just a part of that, what do you call it, peninsula, was originally Italy, right? But no one knows why it was called that.
What about Greece?
The weird thing about the ancient Greeks is they did not have an empire. Everywhere that they were was called Greece. But it wasn't as though there was sort of a central controlling power that was in charge of all of those countries. So they basically, they controlled the whole of the Mediterranean, you know, one time or another.
So it might be like a tribal name originally that was spread to or applied to everyone else.
So originally applied to what is part of what is modern day Greece, which is very convenient. But again, Greece is an exonym, isn't it? They don't call it that in Greek. It's Hellas, I think, in Greek, isn't it?
Similar to Helen.
Yeah. And we refer to things that are Greek as Hellenic. Yeah. Uh-huh. We should talk about Portugal as well, which is, you know, mildly mysterious. We don't know precisely what's going on with the name Portugal. What we do know is that it was originally the name of just the area around Porto.
Something like a port.
Yeah. Its Roman name was Portus Calais. We're not entirely sure what the Calais, so C-A-L-E, bit meant. It might mean beautiful. You know, we talked about Calipygian. That's one of your favorite words, right?
Yes, indeed.
From the Greek kalis, perhaps, meaning beautiful. But no one's quite sure about that. It might even be another reference to a port. That's the thing. So it would be port, which is sort of confusing.
That's what do you call it? A pleonasm or a tautology, depending on your intent, depending on how incorrect you think that is.
And it's also not unreasonable to think that the Gal at the end of Portugal might be a Celtic reference, like the Gauls, Gallic, Gaelic, something like that. It might be the name of the people that were there. I mean, we forget that the Celts were absolutely everywhere at one point. And it's amazing that they're really just on the edge of Britain and in Ireland now, because they were everywhere in Europe.
So the modern country name Egypt is a Greek version, sort of an ancient Egyptian name of the Ka of Ptah, the name of a temple complex in Memphis, Egypt, dedicated to the creator god. And Greek speakers appear to have adapted the name of this temple to refer to the surrounding region. So we've got one of those micro-macro namings here.
Interesting. And Egypt also gives us that word gypsy. Actually, in a lot of languages, the word for gypsy is a geographical reference to somewhere else, somewhere that people think is mysterious, right? So like the Spanish for gypsy is flamenco, right? The name of the dance is the gypsy dance, right? Which is named after Flanders, as in the Flemish people of Northern Europe, because it's far away and mysterious. And in other languages, you have words for gypsy that relate to India, for example. Is there all sort of theories of where these traveling people originated from? And yeah, as is gypsy related to Egypt.
And this incorrect generalization is why, like, it's considered a slur for Romani people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ancient Egypt, the land was called KMT, but Kemet is often how people say it. It means land of black earth. And we also see it in the word alchemy, which is an Arabic adaptation, talking about the alchemical research or chemistry research, also related, that was performed in the land of black earth or Kemet.
This is a neat point while we're on the right continent as well to talk about two other countries that have sort of got names that do mean black, probably. Nigeria and Niger, both of which are named after the river Niger, which probably does come from the Latin for black, although not necessarily. Some sources say that the river was originally called Niger in a local language, which would actually have meant river gear, which means if you say river Niger, we've got ourselves another tautology, because that is river gear.
And then another one is probably Sudan, which refers to people's skin color, probably. It's an Arabic adaptation, meaning the land of people with black skin.
Which is also what Ethiopia means as well.
Another one that might have a reference to this is New Guinea, which originates from the Spanish Nueva Guinea, given in 1545 by a Spanish explorer who sighted the island's north coast. And Guinea itself is from the Portuguese version of this word, which is thought to be a Berber or Tuareg term, meaning black, referring to West African people.
It's very interesting that most, and actually most African countries, their names tell a European story, a story of what Europeans have noticed when they've got there. For example, Cameroon comes from a Portuguese word meaning shrimp, right? It means river of shrimp because a Portuguese explorer thought it was that. And a lot of this goes back to 1884, the Berlin Conference, where basically the European powers got together and started dividing up Africa between themselves and drawing borders where there weren't land borders. So you didn't need names for countries necessarily in these areas because the people living there didn't recognize themselves as one people necessarily.
Post-independence, we have some indigenous restorations after colonial eras ended or shifted to different power dynamics. So many countries intentionally restored pre-colonial or indigenous names, replacing these European ones like Zimbabwe, which is a Shona word meaning houses of stone, replaced Rhodesia, and Eswatini replaced Swaziland. Another country that has been updated lately in the way that English speakers talk about it, I've seen a push for people calling Turkey Turquia more because it reflects more accurately the way people say it there and also is less confusing with the bird, which is named after Turkey, but probably traveled through Turkish traders in Morocco from the United States and was originally a word for a guinea fowl, but then was applied to the American bird.
A mega mess. But they've officially changed the spelling of their name in English to Turquia, right? And that is, if we want to, you know, if we want to accede to their wishes, that is how we should be pronouncing and spelling it. And they do make specific reference to the fact that it sounds better if their name isn't the same as a bird.
Yeah.
Quite funny.
Fair enough.
Yeah, exactly. Czechia as well is the Czech Republic. You know, you're supposed to say Czechia now. I say supposed to say, I mean, as in this, these are, you know, the accepted English names for these countries in these countries. And we didn't mention India and the momentum behind the name Bharat, particularly among members of the Indian government. This is a Sanskrit word that you can find in scriptures from 2000 years ago, referring to India. And yeah, Bharat is preferred by some people. Interestingly, the name Hindustan as well is being used at the moment for India, which is what we called it in English before we called it India.
This has all been very interesting. Do you want to close us out on one more interesting country origin?
Okay, one that I didn't get around to mentioning that I wanted to mention is Moldova, just because it might be named after a dog.
No way.
So Moldova is named after the river, the Moldova River. And the legend goes that it's so named after a dog called Mulder, so the country's founder is out hunting one day. The dog spies an ox that it fancies. The ox fords the river, gets to the other side. The dog jumps in and drowns. Oh. Sorry, it's named after a dead
dog. Wait a minute. I was so excited. Rob, you can't do that.
Sorry. But that wasn't on the list, was it? Named after dogs?
Yeah, no.
The list that of was... So there's at least five things that something can be named after.
Yeah, at least. And, you know, I feel like that's very reductive because of the different ways things happen. I feel like it's very different to say that, like, houses on stilts being compared to Venice is the same thing as countries being named after topographical features and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly way more complicated than there just being four categories. Absolutely.
We should save some of the rest of the world for another episode. We've only touched on a couple of continents, so we have a lot of territory left to cover. Can I ask you how you approached, like, research for this? Like, where did you start, aside from where you are and where you've been?
Well, people who are aware of my channel, Rob Words, will know that I have done a couple of videos about the origins of the names of the countries of Britain and also about the origins and the names of European countries. So I had a lot of that. I drew on a lot of the research that I obviously did for that. And also
that.
I was reading, you know, you can read various foreign affairs papers that will go very deeply into the origins of place names. And so I went into a few of those to get to the bottom of some of the African countries in particular, because they're the ones you don't really want to get wrong.
You took a much more scholarly approach to your order of research. Mine was based, the order in which I looked at country names when researching this episode was the order in which the Animaniacs character Yakko sings about them in the 1993 song, which it's a little outdated. So there's a newer version where he gets the more modern country names too, because like Czechoslovakia isn't the original song. And then anyway, that's the order I went in.
And so to see us out, Jess will recite the entire Yakko country song.
As much as I would love to.
All right. Well, we'll just say goodbye then. And thank you very much for watching.
But I don't know if we have an extra 3 minutes on that one.
Could you actually?
I think so. I can get through the first part. United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, Republic, Dominican, Cuba, Caribbean, Greenland, El Salvador too. I could keep going, but
you know,
I have the first two. Yeah, that's it. That's enough.
I believe you now. Thanks for watching another Words Unraveled.
We'll see you in another part of the world next time.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.